It's time to laugh, learn, and take your photography to the next level with your favorite cowgirls with cameras, Kara, Kim, and Phyllis.
Welcome to the Cowgirls with Cameras podcast. I'm Kim with Kim Beer Photography and Be More Business.
I'm Kara with Fast Horse Photography.
And I'm Phyllis with Phyllis Bruchette Photo. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, everybody. How is everyone doing today?
I feel like I'm still waking up. It feels early, even though I've been up since 6.
I have two words. I'm here.
Yeah, we're here.
Oh, I got a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed this morning.
I know, you're sounding a little bit too bright-eyed for me.
Well, it's good to see your faces.
Yeah, and you're even an hour behind us, so what's the deal, Kim?
Yeah, I slept well last night, and it was very pleasant. And it's the time of year here when you can leave your windows open at night. And although that doesn't bode well for my allergies, and I probably sound a little weird voice-wise, it is the most pleasant sleeping experience to, like, leave my window open at night and hear all the little frogs outside. And then it was really chilly this morning when I woke up. So it felt really good because it's been up to it was like almost 90 degrees here on Sunday. Yeah. So it was really warm. And I was outside quite a bit on Sunday. So it was nice to get a cool reprieve. But it was really pleasant last night to sleep. It was cool yesterday and cool last night and just very, very joyful little spring moment.
Yeah, I don't think it was 37 degrees here this morning, so I don't think I would want to have my windows open, but yeah, it was like 60 night before last overnight, and this morning it was 37, so welcome to Georgia weather.
I was going to say, I'm in shorts and a sweatshirt today, so very Florida.
I mean, it was like a high of 70 yesterday, and it was a high of 85 the day before, so...
Well, I know when I start sweating during my photography sessions that it's almost time to wrap them up for the season. So I'm already about at the end of my season.
Goodness. Oh, gosh. Any fun projects y'all have been up to? I think, Phyllis, have you been on a trip since we recorded last?
I have. I got to go to Nebraska to visit the Arapaho Ranch. Yes. It was fun. It was very tiring. But it was fun.
You're not used to that cabin life.
No. No, I am not. I'm used to horses foaling, but not cows calving. No. It was cool. And especially to see what two people can get done by them. I'm talking about Audra and Chad, not me. But just to see what two people can get done. Although Chad did have to go to town to work one day, and I did get to ride with Audra for the day. Because they do everything on horseback, except for when they tag. They do take the side-by-side out. In the pen, not horses. It's a lot easier and faster to move the side-by-side in the cabin a lot around. But yeah, it was an experience, an education, and I'm very blessed to have been able to get to do that. So thank you, Audra and Chad Johnston at the Arapaho Ranch.
Awesome. So I have to ask, did you get sideways with any mama cows?
We only had one that was even remotely a high-headed
a high-headed heifer?
Yeah. Well, I can't call her a heifer because, you know. But anyway, yeah, their cows are really amazingly good.
We had one year where we bought some heifers that were high-headed heifers. And I've had years where I have feared for my life. And then I've had other years where I've had heifers that I've raised that, like, come to the house with the calf half out, like, I don't understand what's going on, but you're the fixer, so help.
Help me, yeah. Yeah, we did have one she had to pull. Well, we pulled, but mostly she pulled. And of course, they've got it all set up, you know, with the winch or whatever. And so that was easy. And then they also have Corriente cattle, too. And oh, the babies, oh my gosh.
They're tiny, I'm sure.
They're tiny, and they're so... Of course, all the calves are so pretty. They're just the little doe eyes, you know. But the little Corriente calves are... They're littler, and they're, you know, they're brown, and they're spotted. So they're just... They're so cute.
There's, I would always said if kids were calves, I'd have 100,000.
Oh,
yes. I loved raising baby calves. It was awesome. It was one of my favorite parts of having a cow calf herd here. And we didn't do anything that fancy. I mean, my herd was 70 at the its biggest number. I had 70 mama cows. That was
Still a pretty good.
Yeah, but it's not in comparison to what folks out west do at all. It's not the it doesn't live on the same scale, but I got a small smattering of it and it was I enjoyed birthing cows. That was a lot of fun.
It's kind of like when we were in the breeding business with the horses. If everything goes great, yes, I loved it. But you know, you get that one or two that's heartbreaking.
Yeah, that's hard.
Yeah.
But anytime you have you're raising baby animals, like you're you have mamas and babies, it's things so many things can go right in the birthing process and so many things can go wrong. And it's just always it's always a thing. Right.
Yep.
I don't think there's never a year without rah-rahs and tears all in the same thing,
especially in those kind of numbers, too. You know. Yeah. You guys are kind of birthing babies, too.
I think we were going to say the same that Kara's birthing birds.
Yeah, I think when we recorded last, did my babies fledge?
Your babies had fledged.
Okay,
yes.
So since we recorded last, you guys were like, I think Phyllis was like, you know, you might not want to take the nest down, which I was not prepared for. And I was going to take the nest down because I had clients coming to the office and it's looking a little poopy out there. Like the nest isn't as pristine as it was, you know, before. So I was kind of like, well, I should probably, and it's not to mention it's like pumpkins and fall, you know, themed. So I was kind of like, well, maybe I should take it down. But Phyllis was like, you might want to wait because sometimes they will do a second batch of eggs. I think you called it a clutch. So I Googled that and I was like, oh my gosh, she's correct. So I decided to leave it up and my clients came and I apologized at the poopiness of my door when they came in. And the next day there was an egg in the nest. And then every day thereafter for the next 6 days was a new egg. And so I had 6 eggs and then tragedy struck and there was a lot of eggs in the nest and mama flew out and one of the eggs fell out of the nest and my dog ate it. So currently we're down to 5 eggs. But I mean, like, I'm going to have babies again in another week or so. I can't believe it.
Oh, my gosh. And then I was out. I was walking from my coffee pot to the office and looked out my back window and saw a coyote way too close to my house. And so I was very curious what the coyote was up to. And so I walked outside to see what he was doing because I actually thought he was eating one of our cats. And I walked down to the water's edge and I found a goose nest. So we've
That's
had a
wild.
Pair of Canadians.
The picture of that was so cool with all the little soft feathers. I don't know. I'm just like amazed by this. I mean,
this whole bird process.
Yes, I'm amazed by it. I'm finding it very enjoyable and having something like right there where we can see the whole thing has been crazy.
You know what? I said I'm not doing any other than the babies I do here, but I forgot at the ranch yesterday when I went down, we did have some guineas that laid eggs. And I don't know what it is about.
Well, those are fun.
But every once in a while, we get some guinea or get a guinea out on the same one that goes off and just leaves her egg. I mean, like literally leaves them.
Oh.
And so the boys gather them. At first, they'll like put something. Yesterday, they had like a little like a cover over them, you know, to keep them so they're not out baking out in the sun. So hopefully she came back to them last night. I don't know, but I guess we'll see when I go back to the ranch.
She's not a very good guinea mama. Well, I'm afraid my Canadian geese are like newly married, like they're teenage parents or something, because they're not very good parents at this point. The coyote's eating their eggs and they're both swimming around in the lake looking at him, honking. And,
oh,
and
they
I'm
don't
like,
want to get
you-
eaten.
No, they could have gone after him. They
I was going to say, those Canadian geese could have whooped up that coyote big time.
They're wicked. They can be pretty wicked,
They need to grow some geese, like, I don't know,
some
encouragement.
Geese, you know,
I need to go down there and spend some time with them discussing how they need to be warrior geese rather than, you know, like, pacifist geese that are like, oh, no, quit eating our egg, quit eating our egg. And so they'll learn. I'm sure they'll learn. But it's interesting to watch them. They've been fun. They've been here for a month or so. kind of piddling around, I guess, picking out their nesting spots, having a honeymoon. All right. Well, enough of the bird news. I'm sure there will be updates later on. But now we are all of this springing around, all these babies we just been talking about. For a lot of us, we're headed into peak photography season. And some of us who live in hotter climates are winding down.
Already,
but for those
down.
Of us who are still kind of waiting out horses to finish shedding, we're headed into that peak photography season. And we wanted to talk today about, is your camera bag really ready for this photography season? I know a lot of you out there, as a matter of fact, I know to a photographer, every single photographer I have ever met is constantly wanting another piece of gear. And a lot of new photographers are always like, I don't know which camera. I mean, there's decision paralysis that comes with what camera do I buy? What lens do I buy? How much money do I spend? So there's so much overwhelm when it comes to this. So we're going to spend a couple of episodes talking about gear. And this one is getting your camera bag ready for peak photography season. Phyllis is going to kick us off by talking about some essentials for equine photography. And then Kira is going to talk about what else goes in your camera bag, because there's a lot of pockets in a camera bag that needs to be filled up. And trust me, we can do it.
I'm hoping you guys will help me out with that, because I only just looked at my bag and made a list.
Well, that's probably good. We'll keep going. And then I'm going to talk with a little bit kind of at the end about how to stair step yourself into better gear if your budget doesn't allow you to buy exactly what you would like to have right off of the get-go. I bootstrapped up my photography business, so I speak from a place of experience about that. So Phyllis, would you kick us off with knowing what gear you specifically need for equine photography?
Yeah, I like that you put down the essentials. Be sure to keep it to the essentials, because you know that I have way more. I consider my essentials so many things, so I'm going to keep it really tight and specific here.
That's okay.
We just, so everyone out there knows, if you haven't listened to this podcast before, both Kara and I, well, I in particular, have really thought of switching to Nikon just so I could have access to Phyllis's camera closet.
And she's not kidding. I literally have a camera closet. It's a whole closet.
I feel like you're bragging now.
Yeah, I am kind of. I'm so proud of my camera closet. Actually, I need to take a bunch of gear to be traded in at KEH. So anyway, we digress. First off, if you're just getting into equine photography and you're trying to figure out what to do, I would highly recommend looking into a full frame camera. Full frame camera bodies have an advantage in low light situations, and they also, I think, create sharper images. If possible, I'd go mirrorless over at a DSLR if your budget allows. If it doesn't, that's fine. They're both great. Obviously, we all shot with DSLRs for years before mirrorless came out, and we did fine. The second piece of equipment I would highly recommend is getting a 70 to 200 millimeter or something equivalent to that with as low an aperture range as possible. In other words, a f2.8 or f4, something in that range, if you know, whatever you can afford. I prefer to shoot horses around 110 millimeters and up, closer to 200 millimeter if I'm doing confirmation or sale photos. When you're photographing horses, and I'm sure you've heard us talk about this if you do follow us very much, or if you're already a seasoned equine photographer, it's really important to pay attention to image distortion and compression when you're photographing horses. And with the long lens, you'll have more compression. The compression affects your background also. It makes items in the background look closer or larger and closer to the subject. So in other words, when you're shooting horse, it's going to make, because they're long, a horse is very long bodied. So that longer focal range is going to help you with that. For me personally, this isn't something you have to have, but for me personally, I always have my 24-70 on me, which is more of a wide angle lens, especially when I'm photographing large herds of horses. The further back you are, you're not going to get that kind of image distortion, but that's why you don't want to have something real close up in a, you know, in your close to your camera. You will get a lot of distortion. But if I'm wanting to include scenery or even for some fun shots where the action is too close from a bigger lens, it's not mandatory. I'd say if you can only get one lens to go to that other range, the 70 to 200 millimeter,
I know I said just have one good camera and one lens, but also if you're going to be doing, if you are going to be working on jobs or doing events like paying to go to a workshop or tour, I think that having backup equipment is really, really important. At the very minimum, you would need to have a backup camera for you and possibly even a lens, backup lens. It's really super important whether you're a pro or a hobbyist. One piece of equipment fails in your bag. That way you can switch cameras to keep working if you're at a paid shoot or you've paid to attend a workshop or a tour. You sure don't want to miss something due to failed gear. And we didn't, I know this isn't camera gear necessarily, but it's something I'm just going to mention. A big essential for me is having a good camera harness. It's been a lifesaver for my back, or for my neck. It'll keep your gear safe. Mine, the type that I think most of us have, distributes weight evenly and takes the weight off of your neck. And I like having two camera bodies with me with different lenses on. I'll have a more, like I said, the 24-70 on one camera body and then the 70 to 200 on another one. And this is the best way for me to do that. I think if you're just starting out, invest in one body and one lens that suits your budget best, and then feel free to add more later, like I did. If you're working within a budget, invest. I'd rather you see you invest in good, used, higher quality camera versus a brand new lower end camera. There's so many reputable sites out there that has really good used gear, and it's an excellent option to be able to fill your camera bag.
Awesome.
That was a nice little condensed introduction there, Phyllis.
You did a good job on keeping it to just the essentials. Well, I do not have a camera closet like Phyllis does. And I don't have a bunch of lenses. I have two lenses. I have the two that fill out the range there. I even sold my 50 recently.
Ooh.
And I have two bodies right now. So you don't need a ton of backup gear, but I will say that it makes me very happy to know that I always have something that I can fall back on. Even if my camera doesn't break at a shoot or at a paid shoot, but even if like something malfunctions and I can't in the moment figure out how to get it back where I need it, I can always just pick up the other camera and get to work and then figure it out when I get home. So just helps with that work stoppage. So that was a good list, Phyllis.
Well, let me just add one thing to what you just said. The good thing about not having a lot of gear is you don't have that indecision about which lens to take. You know what you're going to take. And I think that's a good thing. That's...
Well, and if I need something, I rent it. So mm-hmm. like if we're taking a trip and I want to play with like a really wide angle, I'll rent it mm-hmm. and bring it with me.
Yeah.
And I'm happy and I'm good to go. But I know it's something I don't need in my toolkit every day, you know?
Yep. I guess because I used to do different things too. I used to shoot landscape. I used to shoot wildlife. So I think that's another reason I have so much gear. I'm trying to justify it here. Okay.
So Phyllis, I'm going to even get, you know, I have a gear closet too. It does share with like my some other things, but it's primarily gear of some variety for photography. And I get emotionally attached to my cameras and I don't want to sell them even when they become old.
Like, that's funny.
Kira
I do
so,
not.
So freely has she has zero like relationship. She's like, you're out of here. I'm getting a new one. You're being replaced. So, but I have a closet full.
Yeah, I know. I still have. Well, I've sold one of my DSLRs. I still have two left. But my old D5, I haven't used in 3 years. And it's just like, but it brought me through so much, you know?
I know. I still have some old film cameras. And I would have my original AE-1 had it not been stolen in a burglary at my house. It's somebody stole it. And I've been upset about it ever since. And I debate every once in a while about going and buying an AE-1. Like, what would I do with this thing? Like,
that's really funny.
Yeah, but and I have duplicate lenses. I have lenses that are no longer any good, but they've been my faithful friends. And so they now have retired to my gear closet.
No, I'm like, you have served me well, and now you will serve me into the next gear by being sold and helping me pay and fund the next piece of gear I need.
I do have to admit, it's really hard for me to trade in that 600 F4 that I bought years ago for, I won't say how much money, but it was a lot. I'll be lucky if I get a fourth of the much of what I paid for it. Mm-hmm. So it's just hard, you know, but anyway.
It is hard. So now, Kira, then not only do we love to buy gear, but I don't know about anybody else in this group, but I do like to have a good gadget as well as good support system. So mm-hmm. what you got for us?
So I think that was supposed to be a segue.
It was a bad one, but we're taking it. We fell
so
off
I'm
the segue.
I'm supposed to talk about what are the other things in your camera bag outside of the gear. So in order to create this list, I walked over to my camera bag and opened it up and made a list of what else is in here besides camera gear. And so this is what I came up with. And I really hope you guys will fill in any gaps that, because I'm a minimalist, that you'll fill in any gaps of things that I'm missing.
Oh, trust me, I will. I'm the gadget queen.
So the first thing I started thinking about was memory cards. And I think this is probably a biggie. It's a pretty critical factor that you need to think about when you're photographing horses, especially those that are in, you know, motion or shooting action. You need a good write speed for your memory cards. Some things to consider would be, you know, are you photographing action? Are you shooting in RAW? Are you shooting video? What's your camera's buffer speed? Because every camera is a little different in that. And then that's going to help you decide your memory card that you should get. With these things in mind, your write speed will help prevent that buffer lag, and it'll allow for long burst shooting, which I love to do. I like to have a high write speed and a really nice card. I personally use the CF Express or the CFast cards. And I like, personally, I like the Sandisk, these little Extreme Pros. I'm showing one for the people who are watching on YouTube. These are the ones that I really like. You have to have this, no, but these are my favorite. And they've just been really good for me. And I think that if you can afford, if your budget will allow it, try to find something that's got 64 gigabytes or higher. I think these are 128. And I like that 128 number. I feel like it gives me plenty of room to shoot a full session or more of still images and video when I'm out without running out of room for that shoot. And I recommend having them also because then you're not having to switch out cards during an actual shoot, which, you know, keeps the dust and the sand and stuff out of your camera if possible. Do you guys have any comments on the memory card piece? Do you have other cards that you like better or thoughts on that?
I like these new, they're not new, but the Pro Grade, I really like them too.
Is that a brand, Pro Grade?
Yes.
Is that a brand?
It's a brand, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're still the Express, but they're just the Pro.
They're CF okay. Express.
Yep.
They have some really, really, really super fast ones.
What are your write speeds on them?
This one is, I don't know anything about write speed. What is that, 850 or 3400? I don't know the difference.
Okay.
I don't understand all that. So I just knew that they were highly recommended. But unlike you, I buy higher capacity. This is a 256 and this is a 512. So
nice. I don't have any that big. You could shoot for a whole week on that, baby.
And I do. Like when I went to Nebraska, I never had to change cards.
Nice.
And I didn't take a computer with me. So that's the reason I like.
You don't feel like it's a little like having all your eggs in a single basket?
Well, I mean, you could say the same with everything, I guess. But
okay. Kim, did you have something you wanted to add?
So when I upgraded to the R3, of course, the R3 has the big, fast, big girl card slot in it, but I'm a budget photographer. I have good gear. I use it till it dies, and they let you do the silly little cards, like these little guys. And when it comes to the measurement of size, I like the smaller card because I do a lot of editing on my iPad and it loads faster. Mm-hmm. However, with the caveat of when I went to Art of the Cowgirl, I forgot my card case. I had like cleaned all my cards up and made sure they were all sorted and put into my card case and then promptly left it on my desk back in Missouri. And so I had to borrow one of these CF Express cards. I borrowed one from Kara and one from Phyllis. And I'm sold on them. They are fantastic. So I will be adding those to my camera bag this spring. But I do want people to know, even if you don't have that card, go with the fastest card you can afford, because it does make a difference. Not so much for me in the shooting. I think that for some people, they like it for the shooting part. I'm more concerned about the editing part. It gets the images quicker into the computer. And I was astonished at how fast my iPad could load those images. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, the days of me plugging the card in and going to dinner and coming back are over. I'm buying this.
That being said, you got to be sure you have a fast card reader too. So it's not just it's not just all about the card. It's your reader too. Yeah.
There's a lot of little caveats to this. So yes. Okay. So good cards.
Okay, so the next thing I had in my bag that I thought was important was backup batteries. So not just the battery that's sitting in your camera, but having backup batteries. And I honestly feel like, you know, it's important to have more than one backup battery. And I feel like the longevity of the name brand batteries, they hold out longer, I think, than the off-brand ones. And I have had both kinds. And I really feel like if I buy the Canon batteries, they hold out longer and do better for me. And they hold their charge longer, but they also just have a longer lifespan. That's my personal experience. I have used the generic. I've got a couple like backup generics in my bag that are just there, but I pretty much never need to use them. Do you guys have any comments on the battery situation?
I totally agree.
Okay.
I concur. Even though I do have some off brands that I use, they don't last as long. And I do prefer the Canon. And it's important to know which battery is. Some cameras have a improved battery life, especially with these mirrorless that depend so much on the battery. So you can get by with the batteries from other older model cameras, but they're not as good. They don't last as long. I have my good batteries.
You have your good batteries and your magic
backup batteries.
Backup batteries.
And I would even suggest if you're buying batteries off of Amazon, be aware that even though it may say it's a Nikon or a Canon brand battery, sometimes what you're getting isn't what you think you're getting.
Yeah. So I agree with that too.
You might want to go to a camera store or something for that.
Okay. The next thing I have is the lens hood. So the lens hood is really important for photographers, primarily because it blocks out the stray light from entering the lens, which helps prevent lens flare and glare. I have found, and you guys probably agree, that lens flare, you know, it can reduce contrast, it can wash out your image colors, it can create just gross artifacts in photos. So using a lens hood can result in sharper, clearer, and more vibrant images. It's also really great for providing physical protection to the lens. So it shields the front element from accidental bumps, scratches, dust, rain. And I feel like it's really valuable when we're shooting in like rugged environments in crowded spaces with other photographers or, you know, around horses, for example. When we're just moving around, if we're hiking through terrain, that lens hood has saved me. And I think there's a lot of photographers out there that just pull that off their camera and it stays in the box and never comes out. But if you hang out with us, we're going to give you a hard time about it and make you put your
we
lens
will
on. Put your lens hood on.
Where's your lens hood? I say that a lot the first day of a lot of our workshops. Where's your lens hood at?
Yeah.
It's also right off the bat to me, like it makes you look more professional to have that lens hood on top of that. But yes, my lens hood has saved my glass.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Multiple
for sure.
times.
And I even like, this is off topic of that, but I even like that little deal that Kim had, the little thing you bought that you could put on there to eliminate more lens flare.
Oh, what like a lens hood for your lens hood?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a visor.
Cool. Thing,
it was a visor for the lens hood.
Yeah, we shoot into the sun a lot, and I think that even helped more. So anyway.
Yeah, I was very happy with that thing.
But I can't hold my camera and do that at the same time. No, that's not happening.
Kara, her gigantic camera is heavy. It requires two hands.
Okay, so the other things that I had in my camera bag, I have an air duster and a microfiber lens cloth. I don't have a full cleaning kit in there, but, you know, you can add a cleaning kit if you want. I feel like this is like an obvious one, but dust, dirt, smudges, fingerprints on the lens surface can degrade your image sharpness, reduce contrast, and cause unwanted artifacts as well, and also distortions in photographs. Just regular cleaning ensures that your lens delivers clear, sharp, and vibrant images all the time. I like to have a dust blower because I feel like it's like a nice safe way to kind of get rid of some of those loose particles without actually touching the lens. I'm also super guilty of just taking my lens cloth and wiping everything down and scratching things, but you don't want to do that. I also think that some of the locations we shoot in with the dust and the sand, like just being able to kind of like blow out those parts is really, really helpful. So I think that's good to have in your camera bag. You never know when you're going to need it. And then the last thing I have here is just something for like weather protection. Most of our cameras are not really fully waterproof, so you should have something handy in case of like wet or rainy weather popping up. there's a lot of options out there. I even saw a really cool, like, full on an advertisement the other day for a full on like poncho system that's coming out that you can wear, that you can have your whole camera inside of. And I was kind of like, I might need that, you know, like I was trying to, but it looked really bulky. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff out there. I find, though, that if it's something that is too bulky or cumbersome, I'm going to tend to leave it at home instead of bring it with me. So I suggest finding something that you can kind of put it in your bag and forget it, and it just stays there all the time. I will tell you, I'm definitely a trash bag and rubber band girl in my camera bag.
I am
so
too.
It just stays in there all the time. You know, you probably don't look like the coolest photographer when you're out there with your trash bag over your head, but that, I mean, you got to have something. So find something that works for you that you will use when you need it. Even there's even some options out there for silicone skins that you can just leave on your camera all the time that help protect your gear. So find something that works for you. I don't know. Phyllis is giving me the eyeballs like she would never put a trash bag on her camera.
Oh, no, I have.
But
I've even put shower caps, a shower crack
cap. Yeah, Ziploc bags, like just having that stuff available to make sure that you can get it out of the rain and wet when you need to.
No, I was just thinking about when you said, when we were talking about rain gear, Kim, remember when we were at imaging last year and the gal
had the umbrella thing? That was exactly what
it
I
was
thought
all
of.
In one. And actually, it was kind of ingenious, but it was,
Talk about bulky to carry around, though. That'd be like a whole nother check-on item for an airplane. It was very elaborate. It had this whole system with an umbrella. Like, you would be happy underneath there. Like, you could just stay underneath there no matter what the weather and be perfectly happy. But it was...
If you're like a horse show photographer, that could be amazing. Like, if you just have to stand at ringside... Honestly, my favorite situation is to just have an assistant follow me around with a big umbrella and hold it over my head while I'm shooting.
Well, now that I'm sitting and thinking about it, that umbrella thing might terrify some horses. Like, it would take a little training
moment. Yeah, you're probably right.
I'm thinking that's good for a portrait photographer, but maybe not so much for an equine photographer.
You always have to think about what's going to terrify the horse.
Okay, so I went through my bag. That's all I had as extras. What am I missing?
Oh, goodness. Well, in your bag, so another thing, if you travel at all with your gear, buy extra battery chargers, because it's super helpful when you run your batteries down shooting all day to have an extra battery charger in your bag.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So there's a million different gadgets for photography. A couple of things that I happen to keep in my bag that are extra that you don't have to, but they're just extra. I'm thinking of what's in my bag. I actually have a remote trigger in my bag where I can trigger my camera remotely. I do carry that around because occasionally I like to get in some of the group pictures I take. I'm part of the group, but I'm also the photographer. So that gives me the opportunity to be able to trigger my shutter from far away. And it would also be handy for night photography because Phyllis is like, I wouldn't take the group picture, but I would take a picture of the Milky Way. So having a remote trigger.
So you must carry a tripod then as well if you're going to do that? No. Okay.
The tripod may be around somewhere. I've been well known to use my video tripod to shoot photos with. So yeah, whatever. But anyway, it is a remote trigger. I've also set my camera on 50-gallon barrels at places and managed to set that up as a tripod and remote trigger the camera. So I do carry a remote trigger. Another thing that is in my bag that I don't know if every photographer carries, but I do like having a gray card if I'm in a really complicated lighting situation to where I can edit later on. So I do carry just a really cheap little gray card that I can stick in the scene, take a photo, get my white balance correct in post process. I'm trying to think of what else. Oh, business cards. If you are a photographer, I know it's peak photography season, handing out business cards and promoting your business is part of that as well.
And I didn't include anything about like off-camera lighting or flash because that's a whole other set that
you'd
have in your bag.
That's a whole other bag you'd have.
I was going to mention, for some people do like to have some filters, like maybe a polarizer or ND filter. I mean, I used to not go anywhere without mine. Now I do. I never take mine with me, but that's another thing I have in my camera closet I don't use anymore. But if I was doing a lot of landscape photography, I would be using them.
Just keeping, you know, the things that you would like to reach for when you need to reach for something. That's that's what you need in your bag. All right. Are we ready to move on to how to afford all of this stuff? So
if you have figured this, your way.
Yeah, how to stair step your way into better equipment. So when I first started in photography, I actually did my first paid jobs with a 50 millimeter lens, which is not ideal for equine photography, and a Canon AE-1, which was just a basic 35 millimeter film camera back in the day. And the lens that I had was the kit lens that came with it. And I think the biggest piece of advice I want to give to people is start with what you can. I look back at some of the images that I took, especially early on with digital photography, and I'm like, those images are still good. And that camera, the cameras that I used back then, they were prosumer level cameras at best most of the time. And honestly, the like megapixels would make you cringe in 2025. But I still use some of those images and things. There were, and I still use some of my film images. So go with what you can afford. It's better that you buy something and shoot with it than it is to not shoot at all. Like it's okay to buy gear that is not at the most expensive level. And even though everybody would want new, Phyllis did mention buying used gear.
And renting.
So, and I do want to talk about renting as well, but understanding, like, do your research, get to know whatever brand of camera that you have chosen to go with, get to know that brand, what the numbers are for the different camera models, what's the different qualifications for the lenses, because when you do your research, you'll be able to identify what's a good deal and what's not a good deal in used gear. Used photography gear is, especially when you're working at the level that most of us are buying gear at, it's a solid bet in being able to get it. You don't have to worry that it's like cheap or going to break. Some of the stuff is made to last. It's not made to go away simply. So, and a lot of it can be repaired, even if it isn't coming in the greatest condition. So I encourage you to look at used gear first. I agree with Phyllis. I would rather that our students buy better quality, higher end used gear than try to afford the newer gear that is not quite as up to par. Right now, there's a big shift between DSLR and mirrorless. Most people who are professional photographers are switching to mirrorless. Hands down, 100% mirrorless is easier to use, easier to learn on. I will die on that particular hill because I do believe that it is so much easier. Is it better as far as image quality coming out? Maybe, maybe not. I think that depends on the photographer, the lens, and all kinds of other factors with it. But everything with a DSLR is perfectly acceptable. And DSLR gear right now, there's a lot of it on the market because a lot of photographers are adding that second mirrorless camera to their bag, and even their backups are up for sale. And not a lot of photographers are like Phyllis and I, which like becomes emotionally attached to our cameras and keep them. A lot of people are like Kira, who have sold them out to KEH or anything else, or who offer them up on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, you know? So when it comes to buying used gear, you can kind of choose from a variety of ways to get it. There's buying from an individual, which I prefer, and I've gotten great gear. Patty Hosmer, bless her soul, who is no longer with us, is I have a whole bag full of her gear that is still being used. She was an amazing photographer, passed away a couple of years ago. So individuals, buy from individuals if you know them. It's easier. Most of the time you can get a pretty good deal. And it's better for the photographer who's selling the gear and you, because these companies that buy used gear, they don't pay what they sell it for, because otherwise they wouldn't be in business, right? So it's a win-win for everybody. You can buy from auction or sales sites. I have bought camera gear off of eBay and been perfectly happy with it. If, as long as you know what you're doing, like get your research put together and know what specifically you are doing. And then there are used camera stores or stores that specialize in it or take gear in on a trade. get to know the system for whatever that store is. They all have condition ratings that they use that are like mint, excellent, good, fair, poor, or inoperable. So get to know all of those things ahead of time so that you know what you're getting is that is worth having. Another way that you can stair step yourself into higher end gear is to also work with an off-brand lens. So when I very first switched over to digital, I spent the money on the camera body itself. And then I went ahead and shot with a Sigma 70 to 200 2.8 because I could afford the Sigma 70 to 200 2.8, but I couldn't afford the Canon version of that yet. So I shot and won many contests, made a lot of money with the Sigma 70 to 200, and I really liked the lens. So read reviews. There's always a lot of reviews online. Photographers will tell you if they think the lens is soft and believe them. Because I've gone, oh, you just don't know what you're doing. And then got the lens and was like, oh, yeah, that isn't going to work. So different iterations of different lenses have, the photographers will tell you. So just read online reviews really well. A lot of people get good results with those off-brand lenses. And then when you're ready, you can sell that lens and upgrade to a brand lens that matches your camera brand. So another way that you can also save a little bit of money on lenses is if you're willing to move up in an f-stop. Like ideally, we all want to shoot with 2.8 or actually the widest open aperture that we can get for any given lens. But there are times that if the 70 to 200 f4 is less pricey than the 70 to 200 2.8. You can also find lenses a lot of times that don't have all the bells and whistles, like they're at the end of kind of their new modelishness and the new models have come out. And so you can find those on a discount as well. I also want to talk about the fact that at least for Canon, and I'm willing to wager that Nikon does this as well as Sony, but they will also have refurbished gear. So that's another way that you can stair step yourself up into better gear is to get refurbished gear. And I am never afraid to buy refurbished gear. Years and years ago, I worked for an electronics repair store that sold gear and then took in gear. It was a lot of electronic stuff, not just cameras. But amazingly, what happens with a lot of that refurb gear, it got returned because people don't read the instruction manual. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. And what's more is that a tech, in order for that to go back out to sale, a technician has had to go through that piece of gear and look at it and certify that it's usable. So in my opinion, refurbished gear is actually better than the other kind of gear because you've had a tech actually go through it and make sure that it was functional and you have less risk of having a dysfunctional camera right out of the box. I'm big on that. You can also rent gear. This is another practice that I use regularly. I'm not quite to the point where I can't justify the cost for some of the newer Canon lenses that go with the mirrorless camera. Like I'm not quite ready to replace all of my EFs with RFs yet. And so when I know I'm going to need a specific lens, I will rent it from a company. And then those rental companies in turn will sell their used equipment. And Chris, I'm willing to gamble on that. I'm the person who bought a used Enterprise rental car. And I had a good experience with that. So I don't get too bent out of shape about the fact that it's been used a lot. So yeah, just take it easy walking into it. And I still am going to always advocate for you buying the best gear that you can afford and then sell it and upgrade to something better and just keep shooting. That's what we're here to do, right? Any thoughts on that?
I would just say with the refurbished gear, I've bought a ton of refurbished gear and I'm a big fan of it as well. My most recent camera was probably the first new camera I've purchased in a long time. And yeah. But I've always bought second generation refurbished. So just to get the best gear that I could afford.
Yeah, and it's a significant savings for refurbished mm-hmm. gears. It's basically a new piece of equipment that has been through a thing. Phyllis, do you know if Nikon has a, Canon has like a whole section of their website devoted to refurb gear.
Yeah, Nikon does too. And they'll come out, especially as a pro, you know, NPS member, they'll send you what's new on the refurbished list, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just a really good way to purchase stuff. And maybe you're one generation behind the current generation, but you know, at one point in time, that was the hottest piece of gear on the market. And now it's yours.
Hey, it's, and if you buy in, if it's new to you, it's new to you, you know, like it's a step up for you and that's okay.
That's right.
It is.
So awesome. All right. Well, I think this has been a great episode. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up. Just a quick reminder that we have two spaces as of today left at our Trappers Lake Lodge event. And that's the, those are the last two ways I think that you can join us somewhere for 2025 at the moment. So if you're interested, check us out online at cowgirlswithcameras.com and navigate to our events page and check out our Trappers event. I also think that if you're online on social media, we'd love to see you, have you come hang out over there at Instagram and Facebook at Cowgirls with Cameras. And then we have our brand new community, which is Hopping, cowgirlswithcameras.community. Check that out online. We're having a lot of fun over there. We'd love to have you join us as well.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cowgirls with Cameras. Don't let the laughter and learning stop here. Join our community on social media and be sure to visit our website for more opportunities to fulfill your photography goals. Head to cowgirlswithcameras.com. That's cowgirlswithcameras.com. See you next time.